Ensure your next purchase is the real deal and shop authentic handbags, watches, sneakers, streetwear, and jewelry from eBay, backed by Authenticity Guarantee. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Listening to the New Yorker Poetry Podcast, I'm Paul Muldoon, the poetry editor of the magazine, and it's a pleasure to welcome you here today. On this program, we invite a poet to choose a poem from the New Yorker archive to read and discuss. And then, of course, we ask them to read one of their own poems that's been published in the magazine. And I have to say that I am thrilled today in what happens to be my final New Yorker podcast to welcome Charles Simic, one of my all-time favourite poets, a former US Poet Laureate and therefore a favourite of so many in the country, recognised for his work, his contributions to poetry right round the world, with the Golden Wreath from Struga Poetry Evenings, the great town of Struga there, the Frost Medal, the Wallace Stevens Award, and of course the Pulitzer Prize. Charles Simic, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Charlie, the poem you have chosen to read today is a poem by Sharon Olds. It's called Her Birthday as Ashes in Seawater. And Sharon Olds is distinguished among in so many ways, but as a poet, of course, who has written so extensively about her family. In this case, of course, her mother. What drew you to this poem?
Because it's a beautiful poem. I mean, it's a very difficult poem to write. You're absolutely right. Sharon has written, you know, endlessly about her family, her father, her mother, her father's death. I mean, long dying, and but this is a very different kind of poem. This is a beautiful sort of elegy. Describing something people do, I mean, which is to take the ashes of, you know, someone, their loved ones, and you know, throw it from the top of a mountain or into the sea or, you know, whatever else they throw it. I remember somebody throwing them in the Hudson River, which, you know, supposedly they were going to flow out to sea. But this is the Pacific, it's not an easy poem to write. It really, it seems to me, inspired. It's just so moving, deeply moving, and gorgeous in its details. Kind of a poem that one doesn't encounter even in her work that often. But it's beautiful, and maybe. I like some of the other poems about parents and family and friends, which are kind of very direct and explicit. I mean, here it's more sort of reticent. It's mother. We learn nothing, no particulars about the mother. But we, as the poem goes, we understand their emotional bond.
You know, speaking of the details, here is a barnacle of egg custard. Here is your tiny spoon with your initials. Quite an extraordinary moment.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you've been to the Pacific. I mean, Pacific Ocean, I mean, to throw something in the Pacific Ocean versus the Atlantic, it's a very different story. I mean, Pacific Ocean is not very Pacific. I can sort of imagine where she went. And, I mean, there are huge waves there. It's drama. I mean, Pacific is dramatic in a big way.
You know, I'm reminded of an image in a poem by Robert Lowell of the Atlantic Ocean breaking over ahead. And indeed, it occurs to me that, of course, one of the poets who released all of us into the possibility of writing about family life in such an intimate way, in such a revelatory way, was, of course, Lowell. Do you detect his hand in this at all? Is he lurking about somewhere just over the horizon?
No, not particularly. I mean, you know, yes, he did write about his family, but, I mean, no one gets written in more detail about their families than Sharon. I mean, her husband, her ex-husband. I mean, there's just no competition there. Other people have written about their parents, but their families. But Sharon has really detailed their lives.
Right.
In a kind of detail that very often, I mean, you know, readers have said, I mean, you know, they said, I don't want to hear this stuff. You know?
Right.
When, you know, father is ill or what other, you know, people who are undergoing some, you know, trauma or whatever.
Right.
The kind of graphic detail you get from her, you know, yes. There's no precedent.
There was a phrase used a few years ago, I remember my daughter using it, TMI, too much information, I suppose was a concept that, might have occurred to some readers of Sharon Olds along the way.
Well, you know, some people love this. I must say, you know, very often I would begin reading a poem that it is so, you know, frank, so, you know, confessional, that I would kind of, you know, I would recoil. Because she writes really well. She wins you over. I mean, you understand after a while, I mean, what she's interested in is just the humanity of these people, everything, the total, not just their minds, their, you know, their past, what they said, their relationship to them, but, you know, just their physical, what they look like, what their bodies look like, you know, even when they were naked, everything. I mean, there are many painters who do that sort of thing, you know, just that kind of super realism. Behind this super realism, she also has plenty of imagination. I mean, this is not, you know, plodding description of people and their activities. So.
It certainly isn't, and we'll hear it in just a moment. Just by way of preamble, though, there's a phrase here I love, which it's the phrase, "Oh, Mom, oh, Mom."
Yeah.
You know, it seems it comes out with a kind of combination of exasperation and resignation, and, you know, it seems just so accurate to, you know, how we all are in the world and how we feel about our parents, our children feel about us, perhaps. And it seems, as you suggest, to be just spot on.
It's a phrase that she, like all of us, must have used, you know, over and over again, you know, in her life. Mom, you know.
Let's listen to the poem now. Her birthday as ashes in seawater. It's by Sharon Olds, and it's read here by John Simic.
By now, my mother has pulled to the top of many small waves, carried in the curve that curls over unto itself and unknots again into the liquid plain, as her ions had been gathered from appearances and concepts, and her dividend, her irreducible, like violet, down, thrown to the seals, starfish, wolf spiders on the edge of Pacific floor. I like to follow her from matter into matter, my little quester, as if she went to sea in a pea green boat. Every separate bit, every crystal shard seems to be here. Her nature unknowable, dense, dispersed. Her atomization, a miracle, the earth without her, a miracle, as if I had arrived on my own with nothing to owe, nothing to grieve, nothing to fear. It would happen with me as it would. Not one molecule lost or sent to the principle or held in a dried orange Commander strongbox stuck with the iron matron maces of the clothes. My mother is a native of this place. She is made of the rosy plates of the shell of one who is the silt of a trench place. Music on its own arm draws chords and then the single note, rosin, jade, blood, catgut, siren gut, hair, hair, here. I miss her. I like my mother. Such peace there is on earth. Now every tooth of her head is safe, ground down to filaments of rock crab fractals and claw facets. The whole color wheel burst and released. Oh, Mom, come sit with me at this stone table at the bottom of the bay. Here is a barnacle of egg custard. Here is your tiny spoon with your initials. Sup with me at dawn on your first day. We are all the dead. I'm not apart from you for long, except for breath, except for everything.
Hi, I'm Deborah Treisman, fiction editor of The New Yorker. Each week on the Writer's Voice podcast, New Yorker fiction writers read their newly published stories from the magazine. You can hear from authors like Colson Whitehead.
Turner nudged Elwood, who had a look of horror on his face. They saw it. Griff wasn't going down. He was going to go for it, no matter what happened after.
Or Joy Williams.
Her father was silent. Slowly, he passed his hand over his hair. This usually meant that he was traveling to a place immune to her presence, a place that indeed contradicted her presence. She might as well go to lunch.
Listen to new stories or dive into our archive of great fiction. You can find the work of your favorite fiction writers and discover new ones. Listen and follow The Writer's Voice wherever you get your podcasts.
That last line or two, I am not apart from you for long, except for breath, except for everything. There's the extraordinary closeness of the relationship, and yet the suggestion that actually they had very little, perhaps even nothing much in common. Is that what it's getting at, do you think?
I think so. I don't quite know what her relationship exactly was with her mother, but whatever it was, you know who it is, it's your mother. Maybe you realize when your mother dies, it's a huge event, even if you were not close to your mother. You sort of realize that here is somebody who remembered you when you were, you know, little, and the whole world, whole past has vanished with your mother. What she remembered and what you shared with her. And, that's what makes it so, I think, powerful. This is a kind of almost ambivalence, or not ambivalence, ambiguity.
You know, she's so deft with the detail again, not one molecule lost or sent to the principal, or held in a dried orange pomander strongbox. These three images drawn from such far-flung areas,
mm-hmm.
and they seem to cover a vast range of territory very quickly.
They do. And, that's what's so admirable about the poem. Also, this, the sounds, the poem sounds good. The movement of the poem, you notice they're all commas, there are no periods in the poem. There is a period. But there's a lot of commas, run-on sentences, and you do feel the movement of the surf, of the sea pounding, of the Pacific pounding, and the movement. And visually, to me, the poem is very rich because I can see how, what she's done. It's, she's went at daybreak, and then she's, poured the box with the ashes into the sea, and then, obviously you watch as it sinks, and then this thoughts, this is a poem, so this is, recollected later, but I found myself completely believing everything she says, and all these far-flung associations that you mention, they seem to me really believable.
So that's Her Birthday as Ashes in Seawater by Sharon Olds, published in the October 10th, 2016 issue of the magazine. And then, not so long ago, in the February 6th, 2017 issue, Charles Simic, we published your poem, The Infinite, and you're going to read that for us now. Tell us a little bit, if you might, about the background to The Infinite.
Well, I mean, this poem is as unlike Sharon's poem as you could possibly imagine. This is here, in this case, is an abstraction, the infinite. I remember in school, I don't know, when do you learn that? I mean, what grade do you learn? When they tell you something that the straight line goes to infinity. And I sort of remember kind of my brain stopping or being astonished, just infinity, the ultimate abstraction, we hear it, you know, the infinite universe, the infinite this, the infinite that, the infinite number, and I wanted to do something kind of fairly obvious. I mean, the way primitive, so-called primitive, you know, cultures used to do, which is to, you know, personify abstractions or their gods. I mean, the gods always, they had kind of a home life. They did things. They had habits. I thought, you know, this is the kind of poem you don't really think about it a great deal. I mean, you just, the idea comes to you, and then, you know, what follows. You can't really deliberate about this, but I wanted to personify it, the infinite, so it's not an abstraction.
Though it may not be a million miles removed in its way from the Sharon Olds poem, because it also includes a sequence of images, I suppose many poems do. It has that, the sound of the surf. It's a sea-bound poem, as it were, which in many intellections is associated with an idea of the infinite, I think, including Matthew Arnold's.
I was going to say, you bet, Dover Beach, of course. Yes, but I must say, I didn't think of any of these things. It's one of those kind of poems that are, I mean, they're poems that are deliberate, that, you know, slowly, like a perfect crime, but the others are done in the spur of the moment, and this is more of the spur of the moment. There's no logic. I mean, how these things are associated, they're associated in the spirit of the occasion, the mood that brings them together.
But a poem like this have come to you fairly, very quickly. You're suggesting that it might have been written quite quickly. I mean, often, as we know, the poem that looks...
Oh, yes. Yeah, it was written whenever it took to write it. I mean, but I tinkered with a few things. I mean, this is inevitable, with a few phrasings. But the general idea, I mean, this kind of poems are written the way artists, painters, you know, they see something and then, you know, I remember sitting with painters, like in a restaurant, and they see something. They give, you know, they always have a pencil or a piece of paper, and they start, you know, drawing something.
There's something, yes. They're getting it down, but is there something, you know, that suggests that, you know, there's something that precedes the getting down? In this case, it's, you know, what is being got down is only discovered as it's been got down. Right?
It's true. You know, once I was going to convert the infinity of a series of concrete images, I mean, I had a glimpse of what it may look like, but I didn't have the actual things until they popped into my head.
Right. Well, listen, let's hear it, The Infinite, read by Charles Simic.
The infinite yawns and keeps yawning. Is it sleepy? Does it miss Pythagoras, the sails on Columbus's three ships? Does the sound of the surf remind it of itself? Does it ever sit over a glass of wine and philosophize? Does it peek into mirrors at night? Does it have a suitcase full of souvenirs stashed away somewhere? Does it like to lie in a hammock with the wind whispering sweet nothings in its ear? Does it enter empty churches and light a single candle on the altar? Does it see us as a couple of fireflies playing hide-and-seek in a graveyard? Does it find us good to eat?
Beautiful. Thank you so much indeed, Charles Simic. I mean, what really excites me about this poem is the way in which the depiction of the infinite becomes more and more sinister, I suppose, as the poem progresses, particularly when, with the idea of it finding us good to eat.
Well, I mean, I think there's no debate about that. I mean, it's hungry and takes care of us. I knew this poem could not be very long because, you know, the reader would get the idea, as it were. And I also knew that it had to become more personal. You know, first making these associations, you know, somebody like Pythagoras who might have known the secret of the infinite, you know, Columbus sailing, you know, but the cliche, the sound of the surf, and this business of a glass of wine. I mean, sometimes when you're sitting alone with a glass of wine and you know, looking out there at some place through a window or whatever, well, you do feel that you have company, and the infinite, I think, would be the proper company. But yes, you say it does get it does get a little more sinister. But
well, vis-a-vis the glass of wine, the poem is a kind of symposium of one. A symposium, of course, being a philosophical conversation that takes place over a glass of wine. So it's really an extension of that.
Right, right, right. You can see here, it's completely personified. It's the infinite is sort of full of itself. I mean, it's arrogant. It's all-powerful. The business about does it enter empty churches and light a single candle at the altar, this is a little mysterious. I mean, why does it do that? I mean, does it feel there's something bigger than me, you know? I mean, or so lights a candle at the altar. And then, of course, get to the business of the fireflies. I mean, our lives, I mean, which brief lives. And does it find us good to eat? I mean, it just popped into my head, you know, so as being the obvious conclusion to something like this.
Good. Well, Charles Simic, it's been a delight speaking with you today. Thank you very much indeed for taking part in the podcast.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for inviting me.
So her birthday is Ashes in Seawater by Sharon Olds, as well as Charles Simic's poem, The Infinite, may be found on newyorker.com. Sharon Olds' latest book of poems is Odes, and Charles Simic's most recent book is The Lunatic. Thank you so much for being with us today.
You may subscribe to this podcast, the Fiction Podcast, the Writer's Voice Podcast, and the Politics and War Podcast by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app. You can hear more poetry read by the authors on newyorker.com and on the New Yorker app, available from the App Store or from Google Play. The theme music is The Pintigree Ferryman from the album The Highlander's Farewell by Alastair Fraser and Natalie Haas from Colburni Records. The New Yorker Poetry Podcast is produced by Jill Duboff of NewYorker.com with help from Hannah Eisenman.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.